Hello and welcome to Essex by the Sea. I'm Owen Ward, exploring the Essex coast, finding out about the amazing and interesting stories it has to offer. And if you'd like to make a small donation to keep the episode dropping, then check out the Ko-fi page for the full details. The link is in the description, and thanks very much in advance. For this episode, it's the stories that are being uncovered that I'm interested in as part of the 58 Ships project. Paul Turvey and Mick Verrier join me outside the Navyard here in the historic part of Harwich, and we're alongside a board with lots of names on, and it's this board that's inspired the 58 Ships project. Paul, first of all, why are we here and researching the names that are on this sign?
Yes, hello Owen, and thank you for coming down here. Well, the board actually describes 58 ships by name and by year, tonnage and the number of guns they had between 1660 and 1827. All of these ships were built in the Navy Yard by the local shipbuilders. Now, for some of these ships, we have excellent histories, like one of the conquerors was at the Battle of Trafalgar, and the captain of marines took the Spanish surrender. This is after Nelson had been killed. So that's great. We've got that ship. But there's 57 other ships with partial histories. And that is what led us to form the project, because we've simply not got that information. And I believe Harwich deserves to know about the ships that were built here, that sailed from here, that had crews from here.
Harwich, Fanfare, Rupert, Francis, Roebuck, Spire, the list goes on. They were the ones that were first built from 1660. So very limited knowledge of these ships then, and that's what the research is all about. Mick, what got you inspired to help out with this project?
Well, it came out of a meeting within the Shanty Festival. Harwich International Shanty Festival has been quite preoccupied, like most of the town, for several years with Christopher Jones and the Mayflower. And when we got past, well, not 2020 as it turned out, 2021, we needed a new sort of angle to investigate. One of the discussions, and no one is quite sure now whose idea it was. It might have been John Fitzgerald's, or it might have been mine, or it might have been Pam's. We don't know. Somebody suggested that we looked at this board and considered the history of the ships that were built here, and maybe finding out more about them and the people who built them and the people who were aboard them. And so we came round and we took lots of pictures of it behind its fence. And the project, once we'd started investigating it, we realised it was too big for the Shanty Festival on its own. So we discussed it with the Harwich Society, with Richard Oxborough, and then we took it to the new Harwich Museum, and it's a joint project now between the three. What fascinates me is that each of these ships has got its own little story, and some of them really are confusing. You'll notice there's two HMS Fearlesses over there, launched in the same year. So one of our big fascinations is working out why that is. I've started at the beginning with Harwich and then Fanfan, and my particular take on this is that I write songs. So I do my research and then write songs. Other people will do their research and just publish the research, and other people will do other arty things, and it's an open-ended project.
So the project isn't just about researching the history, it's actually about creating something new that tells the story.
It's about both. It's about creating something new that tells the story and researching the history and adding something to the history of the town and the history of the Royal Navy as well, for that matter. Not all these ships were built for the Navy as such. Thetis and Dolphin at the end of the list there appear to have been built for the post office as packet ships, and my wife is researching those at the moment, and there are all sorts of possibilities. If Richard Oxborough was here, he would tell you that there must have been many more than the 58 ships. These are the 58 ships we know about so far.
So far, indeed. 1678, only one ship was built, according to this list. 1680, another one that was built. But some years, there's quite a few. As you mentioned, Fearless, two in one year, for some unknown reason at the moment. I mean, there's so much that could be discovered and so many stories from that. It must be quite exciting to be part of.
Oh, yes, it's fascinating. We keep discovering people with ideas that we never even dreamed of. So one of the people who came to our last meeting, Chris Scott, arrived with the idea that they want to dive some of the wrecks and bring back, if they can, bits of some of the timber. I mean, that's just fascinating. We don't know where it'll go.
Presumably, these ships did end up somewhere, and that's part of the project to also find where they lay. The project is in its early days, Paul, and so much could be uncovered. Has there been any little gems that's already been found out about?
There are some gems, but because of the nature of the project, we are going to try to verify the information from more than one source. Because if this project and its output is going to be authoritative, then we definitely need to be able to state where the information has come from and how it has been verified. Now, the way we are doing this is using a collaborative community effort. So we are asking individuals to adopt a ship, or more than one, and to dig into their history. What they then do is they bring that information back, and we'll do our best to sift it and to use our own historians to look at the veracity of the information they've brought. Chris Scott, as Mick just said, has been providing a lot of information about the wrecks and where some of the ships ended their days, and that prompted with one other person from the group, that prompted us to think about building a global map of where the ships are, on the basis that a picture is worth a thousand words. And so I've done that. I've built the website for the project, 58ships.org.uk, so that we have a focus, we have a list of all the ships, we have the information that is known there, and that the individual researchers, volunteer researchers, can add to that information. And as Mick said, this is open-ended. This will go on. It's going to be completely separate from the Shanty Festival, although that's where it came from. So I'm really, really pleased that we've got this off the ground.
1660 to 1827, Mick, those are the years that are on the board. Those are the years that you're looking to cover. What happened, though, in 1827? I mean, did the yard shut down? There's still a dockyard here today, presumably not making boats.
Well, the thing with the what was then called the King's Yard was that the Navy didn't need to build ships here. The ships were being built here and then fitted out at places like Chatham. And it became easier for them to just build the ships there. And also the way that ships were built changed. All of these ships that you see here are basically wooden ships. But when you get into the 1820s, 1830s, things are starting to change. The last two ships on there were already their paddle steamers. And the Navy Yards simply became no longer fit for the Navy's purpose. After that, it would appear, they went back to building the sorts of things they'd been building before 1660, which were effectively Thames barges, wooden barges, sailing barges. And it carried on as a ship-building place until it was just no longer required.
You can see the size of the ships getting bigger from those early days in 1660. The first one, the tonnage, and the second one, 62 and 35. But they go up in size. There's 1,653 there, Hannibal, yep. That was built in 1786. I mean, to give a scale of the kind of size of ship that is, I mean, in comparison to today's modern stuff,
well,
it's quite small, I would guess, but I don't know.
Harwich in 1660 was a hoy, which is effectively the forerunner of what we think of as a Thames sailing barge. So that would give you an idea. Now, if you look up there, there's one ship up there which is a 90-gun ship, or Merle in 1680. So there you're getting up towards something more along the lines of HMS Victory, which was 104 guns. The 74-gun ships that you see, for a very long period of time, they were the Navy's standard warship. And they're nearly all in that 1,600 tons range. So if you imagine your Hornblower stories and any of those sort of naval fiction type things, you're talking about wooden-walled sailing fighting ships. Then there's the little ones. Spy was literally what it purports to be. It was built to counter a threat from small Dutch spy ships that were operating off our coast. And Fanfan was supposedly a similar ship to Spy, but in fact was Prince Rupert's yacht.
Very small vessels,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
How much information is there likely to be out there then, in the sense of, could it be that there is only this record here on this sign that's left?
No is the short answer. I'll give you an example. 2 days ago, Lloyd's List released its archive. So we will have plans, documents, bills of sale, that kind of information available on almost all of these. That particular archive starts around about 1670. So perhaps we might be missing a few, but the majority will fall into that. We also have the Three Decks website, which is a brilliant archive and provides some of the background. So that's just the starter. Then we've got National Archives, Essex Archives, and the National Maritime Museum. There are sources out there, and not forgetting the National Gallery.
Yes, because people would have painted these vessels, wouldn't they? Particularly if they were naval vessels. In the same day, people take photos of them today. I'm just wondering, there's an eclectic mix of names on this board. Achilles, Conqueror, Terror, Druid, Terrible. I'm not sure I'd want to be on a ship called Terrible. Robust.
We all say that.
I wonder where the inspiration came for some of the names.
A lot of them are place names. Obviously, there's three HMS Harwiches up there, and then you can find Ipswich, Colchester, local place names, and then things further afield. I think there was always a connection with place names. There's always been a connection between the Royal Navy's naming of ships and Greek mythology. And then there's names of battles, and ultimately you start to get names of admirals, although I don't think we've got any of those. I don't recognise any. Although Rupert in 1666 would have been named after Prince Rupert, who was at the time Vice-Admiral of England. Restoration kind of speaks for itself. I suspect the whole history of the Navy Yard as the King's Yard, as a dockyard, is arises from the restoration of Charles II in 1660 and Pepys organising the Royal Navy. And because that means that this is a civil service enterprise. So when you talk about availability of records, there were records of everything. It's just finding them.
And that's part of the joy, I suppose, why people are doing it, isn't it? It's uncovering those stories, finding out about those fascinating things, and basically having a good old rummage around the archives.
And yes, and one of the things we wanted to do from the outset was to encourage people into this kind of research who have not previously done this kind of research. We want new people. It's a project suitable for people of all ages. It's a project suitable for people who live here because they live here, or people who live elsewhere because they can see some connection with the ships. Some people I know have picked the ships they want to research purely based on names. Other people because they believe there's a connection with an event or a person. The Three Decks website that Paul mentions, fascinatingly, the research on there extends to connections between people and ships. So wherever they found records of who was in the crew, you can get names and you can link people. So we know of specific individuals, quite in some cases quite well-known famous individuals, served on some of these Harwich ships, and that means the stories become a bit like a route system. You follow one, and before you know where you you've gone a long way from the Harwich ship you started with into a completely different story. So we can connect this to the mutiny on the Bounty, for example. The Bounty was not a Harwich ship, but William Bligh did eventually captain one.
So many different stories to tell, so many to uncover. And I know because the project is in its infancy and early days, you're still looking for people to help because this is a mammoth task. Paul, you mentioned the website. Where can people find out more?
Right, I'm at 58ships.org.uk. We've got all the ships on there. We've got all of the confirmed research. But there's more to be found. There's plenty more to be found. Like I said earlier, there's a Rex map, which we are building as we get the information. There's the background to that. There's also the videos that we've recorded. So if people want to be able to watch the YouTube videos with the explainers, then that's linked from there, as are all the socials. And the socials are all at 58 Ships.
All the links to those are in the description. The yard's very busy still. There's a lorry just entering the yard. A boat has just slipped away, which is why the sound now on this episode of Essex by the Sea has changed to what it was at the very beginning. So still very much thriving, very much part of Harwich. Paul, Mick, thank you very much for joining me here on Essex by the Sea, and good luck in the research of the 58 ships.
Thank you.
Don't forget, if you are enjoying Essex by the Sea, hit the subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Until the next one, thanks very much for listening.